Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Obituary for Friday, August 14th. Laura Louise Pat Burchett. Pat Burchett, 86, of Brady, passed away Wednesday, August 5th. She was born in Sanderson to Martin and Clara Bode Bodkin, February 24, 1934. She married R.N. Sanders in 1952, and Mr. Sanders passed away in 1979. In the fall of 1981, she married Harold Burchett, who passed away in 2002. She had lived in Odessa for 60-plus years. Laura is preceded in death by her parents, husbands R.N. Sanders and Harold Burchett, three brothers and three sisters. She is survived by her son Robert Sanders and wife Lisa of Houston, three daughters, Nancy Cooper and husband Prisley of Rochelle, Debbie Fowler and husband Mike of Odessa, and Laura Edgerton and husband Billy of Timor-Leste, Southeast Asia. Six grandchildren and five great-grandchildren and a special cousin, Ludi Capps. A memorial service will be held at a later date. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Heritage Funeral Home of Brady. Please view Ms. Burchett's memorial at www.heritagefuneralhome.com. Death notices. Billy Ray Crump. Billy Ray Crump, 67, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 13th in Mineola. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Charlene Johnson Harrington. Charlene Johnson Harrington, 65, of Odessa, died Tuesday, August 4th. A celebration of life was held Friday, August 14th at Texas St. Clements Church of Christ. Burial will take place at a later date. Pastor Devin DeShields officiated. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Berthina Pequez Holbert. Berthina Pequez Holbert, 83, of Odessa, died Saturday, July 25th in Midland. A memorial service was held Friday, August 14th at Highland and Bunch Church of Christ. The family has opted for cremation. Pastor Gene Collins officiated. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Johnny Edward Johnson, Jr. Johnny Edward Johnson, Jr., 81, of Odessa, died Sunday, August 9th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 15th. At Life Unlimited Church. Burial will follow Monday, August 17th at 10 a.m. at Ector County Cemetery in the Odessa 2 section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Elaine Wofford. Elaine Wofford, 69, of Odessa, died Wednesday, August 12th. A funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. August 18th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Reverend Mike Bartlett officiating. Carlton Sanderson. Carlton Sanderson, 71, died Tuesday, August 11th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Crematory Funeral Home of Midland. Terry Michelle Reagan Ruiz. Terry Michelle Reagan Ruiz, 56, died Friday, August 7th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, MRT.com, for Sunday, August 9th, 2020. Section C, Viewpoints. Commentary. Future of Texas oil gas depends on bold leadership. By Ed Longenecker, TIPRO, Typro, As the U.S. oil and gas industry endures the most challenging market conditions in its history, other threats loom on the horizon. Consequently, the future of the industry will undoubtedly require bold leadership and a concerted effort to support continued domestic development. New analysis from the Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association, TIPRO, shows the oil and gas industry represented 321,455 direct jobs in the state of Texas during the first 6 months of 2020, a decrease of nearly 40,000 jobs compared to the previous year. Over 2 million indirect jobs were also tied to the Texas oil and natural gas industry during the same time period. Operators started the year with conservative plans for production growth in order to achieve free cash flow and had already cut a notable amount of capital expenditures, CAPEX, CAPEX, even before the outbreak of the novel coronavirus, COVID-19 pandemic, and this year's economic downturn. Crude prices going into the negative territory in April for the first time in history and trading below $30 per barrel for nearly 3 months sent major shockwaves across the oil and gas industry. This unprecedented price crash resulted in nearly $50 billion in CapEx cuts, forced large-scale shut-ins across the country, drove the national rig count to its lowest level in the last 6 years, with the July average being 285 active rigs deployed, and caused numerous E&P bankruptcies. As the nation's largest producer, the Texas oil and gas industry has borne the brunt of COVID-19 demand deconstruction and ongoing capital constraints. According to TIPRO, Texas oil production decreased in the first half of 2020 by 46 million barrels compared to the third and fourth quarters of 2019, while natural gas production fell by 162 million cubic feet of gas during the same time period. Overall, U.S. oil production is expected to continue to fall, moving into the second half of the year. U.S. exit-to-exit oil production, December 2019 through December 2020, is projected to drop by an estimated 2 million barrels of oil per day, approximately 40% of which will ultimately come from the state of Texas. Several prominent Texas operators have also recently forecasted little to no growth in output for 2021 compared to this year. Despite facing a wide array of challenges, the oil and natural gas sector remains one of the most innovative, resilient, and impactful sectors in the state and will eventually emerge from this downturn as market conditions improve. The recovery of our industry and the livelihoods of millions will be in jeopardy, though, if anti-oil and natural gas policies are allowed to advance, including extreme proposals stemming from the Green New Deal, the Keep It in the Ground movement, and a ban against any new oil and gas permits on public lands and waters, a likely precursor for an attempt to halt all U.S. exploration and production activities. There is a stark contrast between energy-minded elected officials that value the contributions of domestic oil and natural gas and a more extreme contingent bent on stopping the production of hydrocarbons in the United States, which would only make us more dependent on foreign sources of oil. At risk is one of our country's key strengths for protecting national security and a true cornerstone of our nation's economy, including more than 19 million direct and indirect American jobs that will not magically be absorbed by another industry of equivalent size and economic impact. Supporting an all-of-the-above approach to our future energy needs versus the elimination of all domestic oil and gas are two vastly different scenarios. We as Texans should not take anything for granted, given the dramatically divergent views on energy policy and what future election cycles could mean for the Texas oil and gas industry. It's incumbent upon us all to help educate policymakers friends and family about the positive impact of domestic oil and gas development, as well as the quantifiable results our industry has achieved in reducing energy emissions and continued efforts to advance environmental stewardship throughout the oil and gas value chain. We encourage all Texas residents to support reliable, affordable energy, the economic prosperity provided by the Texas oil and natural gas sector, and those leaders that understand its critical importance. Join in efforts to inform stakeholders on the importance of oil and natural gas and help our industry advocate for sound, science-based energy policies at all levels of government. Our future depends on it. Ed Longenecker is president of Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association. All eyes on education. MISD School Board seen on April 15, 2019 in Midland. Tim Fisher, Reporter Telegram. Not opening schools will be devastating to vulnerable kids. Carrie McCown. Here's the thing about this pandemic. We're all unwilling participants in a high-stakes game of Jenga in which any piece we pull has consequences. We may not be able to send our kids to a public school physics classroom, but we are all getting a hands-on lesson on Newton's third law. For every action, you get an equal and opposite reaction. If you return to the office, there might be an outbreak. If you reopen schools, teachers could suffer. If we all pretend life is normal, there might not be enough ventilators. If you pull out this piece, the whole tower might come crumbling down. It's a terrifying recipe for immobilization. As the mother of two MISD elementary students, I can't imagine the severe weight of decision-making responsibility our superintendent and school board members feel. Given what we know about this pandemic, it's understandable they can't bring all 27,000 students plus staff back onto our campuses at once. But in completely suspending in-person classes to help fight the virus, we've likely activated Newton's third law. We've jeopardized the safety and well-being of thousands of children in our community whose families do not have the resources, job flexibility, or social support networks to properly educate their children at home. Like it or not, public education provides critical child care for many families in our community. It is the luxury of the privileged to work from home. One cannot wait tables or check out groceries from home. It is the luxury of the privileged to enjoy enriched social support networks with helpful family and friends who care for one another's children. It is the luxury of the privileged to voluntarily and suddenly pivot from being a two-income family to a one-income family so that one parent can supervise homeschool. It is the luxury of the privileged to order groceries for delivery, food for takeout, and behave as though anyone who says kids need to be in school might not care as much about human life as you. What's the old adage? Children are better seen and not heard. Have we fooled ourselves into believing if children are not seen and not heard, perhaps their problems simply go away? As schools get underway virtually, let's look at the reality of what will happen behind closed doors. Churches, community groups, and private enterprises will scramble to find safe places to warehouse children, resulting in large privately funded gatherings of children where the virus could still spread, while our taxpayer-funded schools sit empty. Because alternatives are a luxury good, we must remember in many cases the debilitating cost of private services will be shouldered by those who can afford it least. The district's vendor for child care, Right at School, costs $800 a month per child. 12-year-olds will be left to supervise kindergartners trying to navigate Google Classroom for the first time. A 9-year-old will be left at a kitchen table with a laptop and a cell phone and told not to leave the house, but to call if there are any emergencies. For so many parents, school provides peace of mind while they go out and work hard to put dinner on the table and a roof over their heads. And for many children, school is about felt safety and nourishment and offers a meaningful, sometimes primary, life experience with caring, nurturing adults. Concern about child safety is keeping our teachers and counselors and principals up at night far more than the academic concerns. Though academic concerns are great as well, especially considering how with each month this goes on, we're widening the achievement gap into an achievement chasm. I'm not saying our district should fling open the doors and welcome everyone back to campus. This is a real disease with real devastating consequences. But our kids' lives and futures are equally real. With our best hopes for a vaccine months away, there's no reason to think there will be any substantive change in the virus trajectory in the next 4 weeks. Combine that reality with our district's currently stated decision that reopening will be tied to one limited marker of community spread, and 4 weeks will likely turn into 8, which could easily bleed into a whole semester or academic year. As a community, are we willing to accept the high cost of that possibility? Is a bitter pill easier for us to swallow in 4-week chunks? We need our superintendent and school board to have courageous, creative, bold leadership. They must pivot the district's resources, our tax dollars, into protecting our most vulnerable children, not relying on churches, nonprofits, and community groups to pick up the unavoidable slack. Though I know we all want to do our part to help, our leaders must look at alternative solutions. In the spectrum of possibilities, there are many options between not opening schools at all and flinging the doors wide for all to enter. ECISD is offering a creative phased opening plan, which could be adapted and modified for our own district. We get a daily count of COVID cases. What metric are we using to track the unintended consequential devastation we've unleashed in the lives of our most vulnerable kids and families? Midland Lee is more than a name. Midland Lee has blessed me with so many opportunities, from meeting my wife to lifelong relationships with people who my children know as uncle and family. Going to Midland Lee allowed me to be a part of 2 state championships and a national championship in football and live out a childhood dream when I was drafted out of high school by the Atlanta Braves. That opportunity allowed me to truly understand the brand of Midland Lee when I was in Boston, Orlando, and Anaheim, and people would ask me where I went to school. The response was always the same. What? Whoa! What was it like? It was a great feeling to know our reputation at Midland Lee is known everywhere as synonymous with hard work, unity, and success. People all over the world know Midland Lee for great accomplishments and for that reason only. Midland Lee is something Midland, Texas can be proud of and should be saved. Whether it's Joseph Lee High after the African-American inventor or LEE High, Legacy of Educational Excellence, it doesn't matter to me, because when you say Midland Lee, you are talking about a name the 1983 football team put on the map. It's associated with people I look up to, like Courtney Turner, John Thurman, and my brother Cedric Benson. It's a name my teammates and classmates kept building upon, and a tradition that is strong and getting stronger to this day. Midland Lee's legacy and its tradition is about hard work and building character that gives our children life skills to be successful. My daughter is now a rebel. She's been looking forward to the day when she could finally put that maroon jersey on and be a part of the tradition. She's grown up knowing personally that it means something great and that it's an honor. One of my greatest joys was being able to mentor and get to know Dustin Hunt when he played football for Lee. After practice one day, I introduced my son to him, and his reaction was pure awe. Ryan told me later that he got to meet a real Lee Rebel football player. He's inspired even more to be a Rebel like Dustin and his dad and uncles since that day. I truly hope that my children and all our children have the opportunity to be a part of something bigger than themselves. Our name is respected, something good, and to be thankful that we have. The name Midland Lee is built on hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, but also a lot of love. There's a reason we call ourselves family. Giving that up would not only be giving up part of who we grew up to be, but denying our children the opportunity to be a part of a culture rich in tradition and values. We are Midland Lee. It's a lot more than a name to us. John Rogers, Lee High School graduate. Budget offers minimal impact on services, good fiscal management. Over the past 2 months, I have held numerous budget meetings with the county auditor, department heads, and elected officials. They and their staffs have worked tirelessly to make budget requests that were fiscally responsible, streamlined due to our economic downturn brought on by the foreign oil markets and COVID-19, and consistent with the priorities the commissioners and I outlined at our retreat last spring. As county judge, I have the privilege of presenting this annual budget to the commissioners' court for approval. If you have an opportunity to review this budget, which can be found at https://co.midland.tx.us/157/auditors-office. Here is what you will find. 1. Expense reduction. I requested a 15% across-the-board decrease in operating expenses from each department. I am proud of those who were able to meet my request. I am especially proud of those who exceeded my request. Overall, I am proud of the fact that my second budget as county judge overall came in at almost 15% lower than the previous year, while maintaining services, safety, and road repairs, construction. 2. Public safety. This is my top priority. Sheriff Kreiner has delivered a budget which, in my opinion, appropriately reflects what our law enforcement officials need to accomplish their job. Along with our detention facility, this department is by far the largest part of our county workforce and makes up roughly 1/3 of the county's annual budget. I am confident that Midlanders will receive the utmost in protection from these men and women who keep us safe. We live in times of stress, and the protection of those on the front lines are paramount to me. Roads. In my first budget, an unheard-of amount of $50 million was budgeted. We have seen many projects engineered, started, completed, and in use this year. In FY 2021, roads are a high priority again. I have budgeted another $50 million for road construction, reconstruction, and repair into this new budget. We are working hard to ensure you can navigate the county road system safely and timely. Fortunately, $18 million of this budget comes from state funds. 4. Personnel. Midland County employees are some of the best and the brightest. Even when other organizations have laid off employees, we have been fortunate to maintain the employees we have without cutting or adjusting salaries. Employees of the county enjoy security during one of the worst economic times in our history, and I am proud that during this coronavirus outbreak, they have all performed the services needed and required by you, the customer. We have had to adapt at times, but we are up and running to serve you. I am proud of them and thank them all. 5. Horseshoe Arena. This budget also includes a unique way to budget for the Horseshoe facility. I've proposed a balanced budget. Last year, we advanced $1.2 million to the management company to operate the Horseshoe facility. The management company returned approximately $780,000 in revenues to the treasurer's office. So instead of budgeting $1.2 million, I have budgeted $750,000 for operating expenses in FY 2021. Moving forward, as long as I am county judge, I intend to budget the amount returned each year in the following year's budget. Another reason for this approach is that under the current contract, approved before I became county judge, the management company receives 25% of any money that is budgeted but not spent. Due to COVID, the management company did not spend everything we allocated and will receive more than $150,000 from the taxpayers for being closed. My intent and hope are that the company hired to manage the property can and will use all due diligence to keep costs to as close as possible to the revenues that are generated. Regarding the Horseshoe Arena, it is important to keep a couple of other things in mind. A. Midland County pays roughly $2 million additional per year in other operating costs. That includes items like utilities and maintenance and labor expense to other departments. B. We've also spent $6.2 million on an addition to the facility. This budget does not include any more major renovations for FY 2021 because I am convinced we have a facility you can be proud of for many years to come. 6. Taxes. I think it is important that we hold the line on taxes. My budget does not include a tax increase. The taxpayers of Midland County could use some relief. Thank you for the honor and privilege of serving as your Midland County judge. While budgeting in an economic downturn and a pandemic is something I never thought I'd have to do, rest assured that we've done it with minimal impact on services and good fiscal management. Please send any comments you have to tjohnson@mcounty.com. That's tjohnson@mcounty.com. Or the other members of Commissioner's Court. I know they would appreciate your encouragement to support the fiscally responsible, balanced budget I am proposing. Terry Johnson, County Judge.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Monday, August 10th, 2020. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled "Horseshoes Budget Cuts Are a Laughing Matter" by Scott Ramsey, Precinct 1 Commissioner. Editor's note, the following is a response to an opinion article written by County Judge Terry Johnson that appeared on the front of the Viewpoint section on Sunday. Because discussions of the tax rate begin today at the Commissioner's Court meeting, the Reporter-Telegram is offering this opinion article today. The following is a hypothetical letter from the residents of Ector County. Dear Midland County Commissioner's Court, you guys really make us laugh. You build a beautiful multi-purpose event center with no debt, the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, Pavilion, and Amphitheater, to serve your community. Yet you do everything possible to block its success. For decades, Ector County and the Ector County Coliseum have enjoyed a monopoly in the business of special events, rodeos, popular entertainment, and fairs. Ector County and its taxpayers have benefited from the Coliseum to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars in economic activity in Odessa and Ector County. Ector County is proud of our facility and the fact that the residents and commissioners' court have provided their unconditional support since 1954. The Midland County Horseshoe is a wonderful multi-purpose event center. You hired Joe Kelly and Horseshoe Hospitality Services to manage your event center. Mr. Kelly's stellar reputation is well known across the nation. He managed the renowned Reno Event Center in Nevada, an event center four times the size of the Horseshoe venue, for over 14 years with great success until he took the opportunity to come home to Texas. You even commissioned an economic study from Convention Sports and Leisure, a highly respected company whose clients include the University of Texas, Las Vegas Convention Center, New Orleans Convention Center, and the Dallas Cowboys. This study showed that the Midland County Horseshoe has generated over $57 million in economic benefit to the residents of Midland County in just 3 years. Yet you still do everything in your power to block its success. Financial records show the Midland County Horseshoe has netted Midland County $470,000 over the last 3 years. This generation of funds from a county event center is unheard of in other municipalities. You asked all county departments to cut 2021 budgets 15%. Horseshoe Hospitality Services cut its budget just under 15% without reduction of personnel, yet that was not enough. The county judge's proposed budget cut of $300,000 from the reduced budget is an additional decrease of 30%. No other department has been cut anywhere close to that degree. It is a mystery to us why the county judge did not have the respect and courtesy to meet with Horseshoe Hospitality Services to better understand their operations and budgetary needs. Those cuts will ensure that the Horseshoe cannot compete with other event centers in the area, which is great for Hector County. That makes us laugh uncontrollably. The taxpayers of Hector County would like to thank those members of the Midland County Commissioners Court for your infusion of economic activity into our county. Keep this up. We welcome all the gifts you will give us in these hard economic times. Sincerely, Hector County citizens. A note from Scott Ramsey, Midland County Commissioner, Precinct 1. I would like to thank the elected officials and department heads for their hard work during this year's budget cycle. You stepped up to the plate and cut your budgets as requested, but maintain your staffs to properly serve the residents of Midland County. I would also like to thank my fellow commissioners for their hard work over the past 3 months of budget preparation. This is not the work of just one person. The untold hours you put in this budget give the county the ability to continue its great work for the population at large. The budget is a team effort. There is no I or me in county government. There is only we. We are a family at Midland County, and this family stuck together to make these budget reductions happen. Midland County, please do not worry. We will move forward through these hard times.
Latino Museum will highlight foundational contributions. Guest View, the Dallas Morning News. Latino influence in the United States is everywhere. It takes the shape of farm workers' rights, civil rights reporting, and Supreme Court representation. The toll of Latino labor is in the food that we eat and the names that line our streets. It precedes the foundation of this country, yet the recognition often gets overlooked, if not erased entirely. The important legacy of Latino Americans cannot be overlooked, and especially not now, as we memorialize the first anniversary of the killings of 23 people in El Paso on August 3, 2019, by a North Texas gunman who targeted them for their race. And that's why, after the bill to create the National Museum of the American Latino passed through the House unanimously, we celebrate. It's time that the narrative shifts and that Latinos are recognized for the wealth of expertise, hard work, and culture they have given to this country. The move to support the museum follows years of effort to create a space to highlight the contributions of Latinos to the United States. Work toward this museum dates to at least 1994, when a study revealed that Latinos had been largely left out of exhibits and programming in the museums that line Washington's Constitution Avenue. Legislation for the museum was introduced in 2013. It's exciting to see an official step forward, though the end result is years away, as the bill must still pass through the Senate and begin its earliest stages of planning. Previous concerns about opening the museum mounted from budget pressures, as some argued the Smithsonian should focus on improving the museums it already has, rather than shift its efforts to a new one. But if this museum is seen to completion, it will dedicate a necessary space to the voices of the millions who have contributed to this country since its inception, alongside the National Museum of African American History and Culture and the National Museum of the American Indian. Currently, Latinos constitute nearly a fifth of the U.S. population, the second largest group behind only the white population. In Texas, that percentage of Latinos doubles to 2/5. The state has also been home to major events that involve Latinos and have shaped the U.S. as it stands now, including the Mexican-American War in the 1840s. The establishment of such an institution will allow that history to be seen in greater depth and color, telling the American story from a perspective that has been too often untold. We must not forget, the Latino story is an American one. Distributed by Tribune Content Agency.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, August the 9th, 2020. Letters to the Editor. Generous stranger shows kindness to Marines. After 2 weeks of arduous infantry training outside of Fort Bliss, the Marines of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 23rd Marines, stopped to refuel in my hometown of Midland on the night of July 30. While waiting outside for my Marines to finish buying their food, drinks, and Copenhagen, I realized that a very generous stranger had selflessly offered to pay for every Marine's purchase. This was an incredibly kind act that was greatly appreciated by the Marines, and I would like to publicly thank Mr. Will Bailey, the owner of Great Horn Carriers Trucking Company. I'm proud to be from Midland, and I take great pleasure in knowing that despite all our nation's recent troubles, West Texans can still be counted on to show the country what kindness and patriotism look like. Major Michael Wood, Commanding Officer, Company B, 1st Battalion, 23rd Marines, Fort Worth. MISD reopening plan is inadequate. Midland ISD notified the public Monday that because of safety concerns related to COVID-19, it plans to resume fall classes virtually for all students for at least the first month of school. However, in planning for best interests of health and safety for the public, MISD has failed to recognize that its employees and their families are also members of the public. MISD teachers were informed at the last minute that they are expected to provide virtual instruction in their empty classrooms. It is apparent that there was zero thought given to accommodating teachers with children in the district. Given a severe backlash in response from staff, I understand there is a frantic last-minute plan being put in place to try and cover up this severe oversight to provide on-site child care. However, crowding the children of MISD employees into an on-site child care arrangement defeats the goals of providing safety to the teachers and their families. Furthermore, what kind of quality education are these students going to receive when they are learning virtually but in a physical daycare setting? I urge the MISD school board to give careful consideration to the inadequacies of the reopening plan that have been terribly exposed with Monday's announcement, and to work for the best interest of the entire public. It is time to show compassion for our teachers and the district, and the district should not put teachers in the precarious position of having to choose between safety and career. This all could be resolved by permitting teachers to teach remotely, as was done in the previous school year when the health crisis was not nearly as severe as it is today. Furthermore, the callous nature of the response by Superintendent Orlando Riddick was, when confronted with my concerns, motivated one school board member to personally reach out to me to sincerely apologize for his unprofessionalism, which he shared was not isolated to one interaction with me. I challenged the MISD board to contemplate whether aggressive exchanges with taxpayers by the district's top leader is the type of leadership that is right for this community. Rory Hassler. Name change wouldn't add to student learning. I question the wisdom of the MISD school board's recent decision to change the name of Midland Lee High School. Currently, Midland County and the Permian Basin are suffering from a downward trend in the oil and gas industry. Moreover, the county is experiencing economic shrinkage from the coronavirus epidemic. In the midst of this, the school board votes to change a school name that will cost the taxpayers at least $300,000 or more. when Rick Davis, the board president, and incidentally my school board member, was asked about cost, he acted unconcerned. Recently, Midland went through a shaky bond election. Obviously, MISD has a plan to add one, perhaps two high schools in terms of brick and mortar. A name change would not add anything of substance to the teaching of MISD students. It would be only cosmetic and seems to be to appease some mid-30-ish Lee alum who have yet to realize there is life after high school. The move to spend this kind of money under these circumstances is fiscally irresponsible and should be delayed until there is money to waste and until the building situation is solidified. You don't have to look to Washington for fiscal nonsense. It can be found in downtown Midland. Steve Hirschberger. Name school after Tommy Lee Jones. The no-name high school in Midland should be named after Tommy Lee Jones, one of our school's most accomplished students. Tommy Lee Jones was born and raised in Texas. He played guard on Harvard's undefeated 1968 football team. He won multiple awards for the roles he played in the movies he helped to produce, Oscars, Emmys, and Golden Globes. He speaks fluent Spanish. He gave the nominating speech for his college roommate, Al Gore, at the Democratic nominee for president at the 2000 DNC. He currently owns or lives on ranches in San Saba near San Antonio and Van Horn. Jones High School would keep the school's historic spirit alive while still moving away from the Confederate ties of Robert E. Lee. It might also allow booster clubs and MISD the extra time they need to raise funds to adjust to the change. As a current math teacher and an alumni at No Name High School, I firmly endorse and support this change. Nathan Hamm. Doing away with Lee name is unforgivable. I had lived in Midland for 53 years, and I am still a proud rebel. I have been since 1970, my sophomore year at Lee High School. I'm talking rebel flag, singing Dixie, maroon and white, and all that went with her. Banning the flag might be understood. Stopping the Song of Dixie was wrong. But doing away with the name of a great American is unforgivable. Now, I can truthfully say I miss nothing in Midland because of the recent cowardice shown by six members of the MISD school board. There is no need for the name change. They simply bent over under fear of recent violence, political correctness, legalized hypocrisy, and simple convenience. Never mind that the general himself had opposition to slavery, worked to reunite a country, knowing that it was in God's will, and simply professed to being a humble Christian. His leadership in the Confederacy was to defend his home, family, and people against an invading army, and in truth, a Yankee army that couldn't care less about freeing slaves. My graduation class will be celebrating its 50th anniversary in a couple of years. I will have to miss it. But at least I know that my graduating class weren't cowards. I remember seeing in the halls of Lee High School a poster which read, "A mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open." Approved by the MISD school board, they are not only cowards but hypocrites. I'm not sure who will foot the bill for paying for the name change, new signage, new uniforms, band and athletic, paint jobs on vehicles and equipment, new documentation printouts, new logos, and who knows what all else. But I'm relieved it won't be out of my pocket anymore. Darryl Ray, Gatesville. There's a cost to changing a school name. If a MISD spends $1,300,000 either on academic program or renaming two schools, would you really prefer the latter? I graduated from John H. Reagan in Austin, which was under siege several years ago, along with four other schools. Turns out, John H. Reagan's outrageous sin was serving as postmaster during the Confederacy, negating any other accomplishments. AISD stated it would cost $320,000 to change the name of the five schools. Didn't pass my smell test. And since that $300,000 number is erroneously thrown around by other school districts for name changes, A school, much like a business, has communication with many other organizations and government entities, an internet presence, a massive amount of correspondence with students, faculty, parents, etc., that all contain logos, signature info, etc. Any business owner that has changed the name or tax ID of their business knows this is a lengthy, arduous task requiring much effort and expertise, which can literally take years to complete. There are fees and postage, but that pales in comparison to labor costs for web pages, correspondence, and name changes to take place in the community, state, and nationally in other organizations' systems. The cost of this labor would be extremely difficult to capture and analyze, and is very conveniently ignored by ISDs. San Antonio dropped the Robert E. and changed Lee to an acronym, saving a lot of money. Turns out that it's only tearing down a statue, changing the sign, and replacing band uniforms cost them $300,000. There's that number again. But it still doesn't include the ISD labor costs, nor the costs to local businesses with wall murals, advertising, and merchandise, nor the labor costs for the reciprocating correspondence of other organizations spread across the community, the state, and the nation. MISD needs to follow S.A. Lee's footsteps. But who should foot the bill? Floyd Prather.
This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, August 9th, 2020. Other Voices. Letter to the Editor. Good riddance to most daycare. The cause of marriage was to unite two people to conceive, then raise their children in their values to be responsible, caring, intelligent adults who would benefit others. But we have shoved those notions aside in favor of women working outside the home, fathers relegated to sperm and cash/support donors, women married to the state, leaving children to the professional daycare industry. That care rears children in other than parent values, poor early training, lack of sharing experiences, confused about the differences between men and women, and without modeling/demonstration of love. Look at the country around you. We have created an entire population of disconnected, untrained, valueless, uncaring, destructive, misguided young adults and teenagers. Not experienced in love by rearing parents who model it between each other and warmly express it to their children, they create their versions of love. Bemoan the current collapse of that child care industry in favor of parental contact? For this one effect of COVID-19, I celebrate it. Douglas Moss, Odessa.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Concerns about pacemaker and exercise. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 71-year-old woman, healthy and of normal weight. I had a pacemaker put in back in December 2019 due to heart block. I had a low heart rate of 37, which caused periodic shortness of breath and trouble walking for exercise without becoming dizzy and lightheaded and feeling like I would pass out. Things are much better since the pacemaker was put in, but I still feel like my heart rate goes high quickly with little exertion, like just walking to the mailbox. My cardiologist says that should improve as I continue to exercise more. Should I be concerned? Answer. Your cardiologist is very likely correct. People with heart block, like many heart issues, often subconsciously decrease their exertion. This leads to deconditioning, and a regular exercise program is the correct treatment. If you aren't getting back to normal, the cardiologist may want to take a look at heart function with an echocardiogram.
Upcoming move prompts best friend to reveal true feelings. Dear Abby, I have been in love with my best friend for 2 years. We met at a summer camp where we were both working, and we hated each other in the beginning. During the process of working together, we somehow became best friends, and I fell desperately in love with him. We talk on the phone for hours and text each other daily. He knows everything about me to the point that I swear he knows me better than I know myself. We hang out in groups mostly. We rarely spend time alone. When we are together, our chemistry is undeniable. We constantly laugh, touch, tease, etc. Everyone around us sees our connection, and they're confused when we say we're not dating. I kind of expressed my feelings to him about a year ago, but he said he wasn't ready to date anyone. Since then, we have grown closer, and our relationship is more unclear. His actions lead me to believe that he feels the way I do and regards me as more than a friend, but he won't make a move or tell me his feelings. The hard part about this is I'm moving in 5 months. Our time together is coming to an end, but I haven't told him how I feel because I don't want his affection or our frequent communication to stop. Do I tell him my feelings again and risk being rejected? Or should I just tell him I'm moving and see if he admits his true feelings for me? Deep in the heartbreak of Texas. Dear Deep, obviously this person cares for you to some degree. Tell him how you feel face to face while you still can. That you care so much for him is a compliment. However, if he still doesn't feel as strongly for you as you hope, once you move, I hope you will regard it as an opportunity to meet new people and form new relationships until you find a special someone who reciprocates your feelings. Trust me, he is out there. Dear Abby, I have read so many letters in your column about families who have all sorts of problems with their children, husband or wife, in-laws, parents, and other family members. They make me wonder how in the world I got so lucky. My husband and I raised 4 children, 2 girls, 2 boys, and they could not be more of a blessing. We text each other every morning, and I text a daughter in Hawaii at night to let her know I'm okay. They call, they send cards, they send flowers. One son sent them to me for several years on his birthday with a card saying, "Thank you for having me." My heart aches for parents who don't have what I have. I can only hope they will find some peace later. And to my 4 children, thank you for the happiness you have brought me over the years. Georgia Mom. Dear Georgia Mom, problems are the basis of my column. There are many functional, happy families, but few of them take the time to write and share that. Clearly, you are a great parent. And for that, you deserve congratulations. However, there is an element of luck in parenting, and I have heard from parents who devoted themselves to giving all they could to their children, and their children did not turn out to be as loving, generous, and appreciative as yours. I agree that your family is fortunate to recognize their blessings, chief among them each other. Dear Abby, write Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Gemini until 7:35 p.m., when the moon enters Cancer. Happy birthday for Friday, August 14, 2020. Observant, honest, and funny, your extreme talents often make you a leader in your field. This year, you are challenged until winter, when your fortunes change for the better. If single, you wear your heart on your sleeve, and so attract a dominant type of individual, not the type you need this year. If attached, you have a very entwined relationship, almost breathing the same breaths. Virgo gives you some rationality. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 3 stars. You're ready to explore and wander. Reflect upon a world map to help intuit the best places for moves or visits. Meanwhile, you take care of immediate transportation needs. Obstacles posed by communication gaps or ornery neighbors are easily overcome. Tonight, spacing out. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Today brings favorable aspects to your financial sector and enables you to attain greater security and add to your earnings. A relationship also solidifies. A practical mood prevails. Double-check directions and details connected to work. Tonight, check up on an elderly relative. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Today brings you to the attention of others. Don't be shy. This is your time to shine. Keep patience in check. If you're feeling stressed, seek relaxation. Get organized, and much can be accomplished. Tonight, celebrate as only a Gemini knows how to celebrate. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Take note of your dreams. A meaningful message might be encoded. You will enjoy times of quiet reverie today. There are thoughts and feelings you might prefer to keep to yourself for the time being. Tonight, go to bed early and get a restful sleep. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Today is a time to embrace ambitious goals. Think and dream big. You will be warmly welcomed into new groups. You can overcome old obstacles with ease. Helpful people are all around you. Tonight, write up a wish list of your greatest aspirations. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. Competitors provide inspiration. Professional obligations can be stressful. Take time to relax and regroup if you start to feel pressured. Travel, new technologies, and assuming greater leadership are all part of expanding your horizons at work. Tonight, catch up with old friends. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Work and activities incorporating music and art from faraway lands can elevate your mind and spirit. Foreign interactions will be especially happy and comforting. While walking or engaging in other active pursuits, you'll sense a deeper connection with yourself. Tonight, daydream away. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Comforting and meaningful messages arrive in your dreams. Today finds you solving mysteries or engaged in research work. The security needs and decisions of others intertwine with your own finances. Tonight, have that family discussion that's been put off for too long. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. A relationship reaches a turning point. Expectations are important in relationships. Others appreciate you, but companions can be high maintenance. Friends have valuable suggestions. Be cooperative. Teamwork is the secret to success today. Tonight, intimate dinner with your loved one. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 4 stars. Buy a new calendar to help plan your days efficiently. Time is your most precious asset now. Vow to use it wisely. Working conditions will become less stressful. Heed new information concerning health and fitness options. Tonight, consult a mentor you respect. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. Today would be a wonderful time to explore which way your heart really leans. A revelation about a person or an important interest will be realized. The rest of your day is very upbeat. Finances are promising. Tonight, twirling around in delight. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Avoid confrontations or financial risk today. All that is familiar and tried and true has a special magic now. Visits from long-lost friends and relatives can be important. Prepare for some added household expenses. Tonight, listen to an elderly female family member who is lonely. Born today, comedian Steve Martin, 1945, director Wim Wenders, 1945, actress Halle Berry, 1966.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.